Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Darren, Donick, and Chase. Another great show for you today. Another beautiful day in Nashville. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Elijah Campbell back at the studio. Darren McFarland on vacation this week. And boy, is he missing out on some fast-paced shows.
He really is.
Even though it's not the greatest news, it's kind of like Groundhog Day now. You know, it's a nightmare, really, when you get down to it. You wake up in the morning, and especially after it turned towards the positive a couple of days ago in terms of no new positive tests. The last couple of days have not been good for the Titans. They continue to trickle in with the positive tests. And on top of it, their argument that they followed all the protocols is not looking good right now. And the walls seem to be closing in, not only with the league, but also the perception nationally outside of Nashville of, you know, the blame game. So we await the next chapter here, but we do know that there will be two more players added to the COVID list. The NFL basically saying now with no choice, they can't play on Sunday. Could they possibly play right. Monday or Tuesday? That remains to be seen. So Chase, if you can, what little pieces of info have you seen in the last 30 minutes? I know I've seen some, but we're trying to, as best we can, piece this together as clearly as possible. And, of course, stay tuned. Another 30 minutes from now, there's probably going to be some other stuff.
Oh, absolutely. All right, so Diana Russini of ESPN, who's been one of many that have been on top of this from the very beginning, she tweeted out about an hour ago, "I'm told by Titans and Bills players they were told there was an option of playing their Sunday game on either Monday or Tuesday in Nashville. If that happens, Thursday night's game between the Chiefs and the Bills would be moved to Saturday. This is all just being discussed." So she put that out about an hour or so ago. Teron Davenport of ESPN put this out about 25 minutes ago. "Further reporting by Dan Graziano confirmed this AM that the NFL did, in fact, reach out to the Titans on September 29th to inform them that in-person meetings outside of the building are banned. Paul Kaharsky had it first. The NFL memo on 10-1 was not the first time the Titans were told," and we know that the report came out yesterday. And Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 had pieces of this a week ago, being told by sources that Titans players were at NBA working out. And then we know the story that came out yesterday about this that had photos. I do know that there have been disputes with this. A to Z Sports has a story talking to Titans players that they're saying that they weren't told they couldn't do it. And so there's a lot of he said going on with this. The bottom line is the Titans have done this. They've worked out, and it continues to spread. And now two games have been affected by this. So I don't really care if the NFL, you know, said, you can't do it, or we recommend that you don't do it. They went and they did it, and it's continuing to spread. So this is a very, very bad situation for the Titans and the NFL.
As we discussed yesterday, I don't think it was a good idea on any level. I am sympathetic, and I think you heard this from Tim Hasselbeck yesterday too, to at the time they were being told of a really tough set of circumstances. A, you've got issues with the COVID, but B, you still might be playing on Sunday or Monday. So I see how you're trying to thread the needle and say, can we get some work in? Because, you know, we got to somehow prepare for the game. I get that. Even though you're willing to maybe bend the rules some here. But if they were specifically told not to gather before that, then that's not going to look good on them. And as you said, maybe that's still in dispute. I heard Chris Sanders yesterday with Jared and Floyd talking about this very thing. Chris Sanders, of course, is an assistant coach at MBA, where one of the workouts was held. There were some others at Rose Park,
yep,
on the basically the baseball field that Belmont plays on. And Chris Sanders said that at that time his understanding was that they were not specifically told that they couldn't meet, even though I think Chris admitted himself that it may not be the best idea, but you could at least sympathize a little bit of, hey, we don't think anybody here is positive, and we might be playing on Sunday, and we know we can't get into our facility until Saturday.
Right.
Let's try to progress. Even though, you know, it's maybe flawed thinking to a lot of people, it's, you know, maybe unsafe to a lot of people, but at least I can see the motivation, the drive to say, okay, this is natural. I got to get ready. I'm a competitor. I can't just sit here for 5 days and then go out and play a football game against the Pittsburgh Steelers,
right,
without practicing. So,
and that's where the NFL is at fault because of their indecisiveness. I mean, you say indecisiveness, but they waited until Friday to make a decision. Okay, the game's not happening. They waited to the last possible minute. The players in their mind are thinking, okay, we're playing right now. We have to do something. So I know A to Z Sports they've talked to some players, and here's a quote.
Okay, yeah, give me that, and then I've got one from John Glennon that's just been thrown out there since we went on the air. We've only been on the show for 7 minutes.
Oh, there
so
you
go. Ahead.
With the gatherings, there wasn't anything written down saying we couldn't because there wasn't a protocol for what to do if the building was closed, but we still had a game. That just got added with the new updates. The players were under the impression it was okay on Wednesday because we had a game still that weekend. End of quote. That is an anonymous player.
Yeah.
To A to Z Sports.
And that makes sense, but here's John Glennon. I'm also now hearing from a source that Titans were specifically told September 29th, the day the facility closed, that they were to have no in-person activities of any kind. That's the day before the September 30th workouts. So Titans, is there a response? Can you shed some light? Because we haven't heard from the Titans in a couple of days here. So
yeah, and they're not helping.
No in-person activities of any kind. Now, can that be interpreted? This is another thing that you, I think, naturally have as a competitor, trying to get an edge, trying to stay sharp, is, you know, maybe they interpreted that as, oh, no in-person meetings of any kind at our facility.
Right.
Oh, it doesn't say specifically that you couldn't go to another place and have a workout. Well, you know, that's how you think, right?
Remember,
that's how we
I
all
brought
think.
This up.
We've all had backyard games playing some game that we made up on the spot where you're making up the rules on the spot. And something comes up in the game where one guy says to another, you didn't say you couldn't do that. You know, there's a dispute that goes on. And maybe clearly you're trying to get an edge, and it looks like you're trying to cheat. I think there's probably some of that in there. And again, in the big picture, they should have erred on the side of caution. They probably shouldn't have done it. I don't know at the end of the day if this is the biggest thing, right? I still go back to what happened the week before with the positive tests with Shane Bowen. To me, that's the bigger issue, and we still await the league's findings on this. Meanwhile, we don't know what's going to happen with the game against the Bills, and if they are going to have to play a game against the Bills, they will they're essentially going to have to do it with 2 weeks off, 2 weeks without a practice, and then you play the Bills. Now that's punishment right there in and of itself, even if you don't have any other sanctions on top of that.
Yeah, and this is where it's and let me be clear on this. I blame the Titans and I blame the NFL. There are faults to be shared by both sides, and you got to blame the situation. I mean, this is unprecedented. It was nothing that they could really prepare for, but I think there were some protocols that weren't followed. And then in trying to fix everything or trying to, you know, figure out the schedule, communication, at least it would appear right now, we may find out differently, but it but maybe communication was murky, was, okay, what did you mean? So I'm hoping that there's some sort of resolution with this that has the NFL and the Titans explaining both sides and then saying, you know, this is where we're going to fix this moving forward. I completely get if you think that you're going to play, and we talked about this last week. I said, well, could they go to one of these private schools and do something like that? And, you know, we came to the conclusion, no, that, you know, they're just shut down. So the fact that this story came out is not all that surprising because of what Tim was saying and what, you know, Rusty Smith tweeted yesterday. Others are saying of you can't expect these guys to go play a game without any type of preparation. It's dangerous to their bodies. I understand that part. But
you know, when you're in a pandemic, I don't think that flies with a lot of people.
Because you were told not to. Was it a recommendation or were you specifically told under no circumstances are you to gather in groups and play? It would appear that they were told under no circumstances are you allowed to gather. And they did it anyway. So they were told by their bosses not to do something and they did it anyway. So
I'm trying to give them as much benefit of the doubt as I can and try to sympathize as a competitor of what competitors try to do under the circumstances they're giving. And these are unprecedented circumstances, as we know. But the bottom line is they're getting slammed from the outside of the perception of this. There is a lot of sentiment of you got to hit them hard, make an example out of them, and congratulations. That's what you get when you're the first team to have this happen to. So I think the hammer is going to drop on some level. Now, I think the forfeit word seems to have been put to rest as we sit here.
Which so I'd agree with that.
I think I've said that all along. Forfeit would be too severe of a punishment here. And you get into issues like who gets paid, right, if the game isn't played. And that is a very real possibility we're getting to is what happens. This is a players association question too. If we get to a point where there are multiple games not played by teams, what happens to those game checks, right? So that's why a forfeit, the Players Association is not going to go for a forfeit. There'll be a lot of arguments to not have that. Because
it'd be unfair to, you know, to the Bills.
Oh, no question. And then the question is there a way to make up that game? And if not, then you get into issues, and ESPN I saw kicking this around too. There could be a situation where you go to winning percentage and some teams aren't able to play 16 games. But the bigger thing is every day that they're not in that facility and can't practice is another day that guys are getting further and further away from game shape. There's no way you can tell me every one of those guys on their own are able to stay in game shape. 2 weeks of not preparing, not physically doing the things you're normally doing, that's going to take a big, big toll. And that is really scary to think about. So,
yeah, absolutely.
With that in mind, we've got our normal Thursday lineup. We're going to continue with this throughout. Big day yesterday for the Predators. We were all over it as it was happening, so it's now settled in a little bit. Elliot Friedman will join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on Luke Cunningham, the Nick Bonino trade, the drafting of the goalie in the first round, lots of good stuff. We'll also talk to David Poile at 1:30. So the 1 o'clock hour, if you're a Predator fan, you're going to want to definitely tune in for that. Also, Floyd Reese at 11 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on this. We've got underdogs today. We've got all kinds of stuff. We'll get back into the Titans a little bit later this hour. But first, our weekly chat with Paul Feinbaum. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. Great SEC football going around the horn next segment here on Darren Donick and Chase.
Them dogs are counting down, about to put the anchor down. Hotty totty, who's it gonna be?
Counting all right, it is time for our weekly chat with Paul Feinbaum. Of course, you can hear his show on 94.9 Game 2. Watch his show on SEC Network every day. ESPN contributor for college football. Glad to have him for our weekly chat. He is brought to you by Gary Force Acura and mtgrt.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, thank you for joining us once again. Let's get right to it. Tennessee feeling pretty good about things. 8 games in a row. They've got Georgia this weekend. Let's start with this, because this is a big narrative going on. You've got a lot of people saying, hey, congratulations on your 8-game winning streak, but you've got others saying, hey, who have they really beaten? But it is progress, in my mind, that they're able to get to a point where maybe you're not quite as worried that they're going to lose a game to a team like Missouri. So they have progressed, but now we're going to find out how much they've progressed on Saturday.
Yeah, I think the narrative is fair. However, had Butch Jones been the coach, or had this been maybe the first year of Jeremy Pruitt, probably would have lost the first game, and who knows, maybe the second game would have gone down to the wire. So I think that much has changed. He is building a program. It's not there yet. And you know, for all the enthusiastic Tennessee fans, and I'm one of them, these rosters Saturday don't really match up. Kirby Smart's been building this program now for 5 years and has one of the two or three, maybe four best programs in the country. But, yeah, it's a good test for Tennessee. I don't expect them to win, but I don't expect them to get blown out either. And I think this is how you measure a program ascending. You know, can it go to a top three matchup and compete and maybe even have a chance to win? Or does it go there and just get blown out? And I think after this game is over, we'll know where the program is. It's won a lot of big games. It's won a lot of good games against inferior opposition. But you know, that changes over the next couple of weeks. And I think I don't think Tennessee will win, but I think Tennessee is primed to continue progressing. And that's really what Jeremy Pruitt is being paid to do right now.
Do you think that Stetson Bennett will be the quarterback from here throughout the end of the season for Georgia? Is he that good? Is he bursting on the scene? Or do you think it's still a week-to-week thing? They've got so many other options that it could go in a different direction.
Yeah, I think this week and especially next week when Georgia goes to Alabama, we'll tell the story. And yeah, I think it will get much tougher for him against Tennessee and incredibly tougher in Tuscaloosa. So I would probably say by early December, will Stetson Bennett be a name we're talking about? My guess is no.
Hmm. We talked about this last week for Texas A&M, and of course they got beat pretty soundly. They hung around for a little while against Alabama, but how much do you think is on the line for the perception of Jimbo Fisher in this game coming up against Florida?
Quite a bit. And you know, the national media is already chirping, and he's such an easy target. I mean, if you're a columnist at USA Today or Yahoo, I mean, you're going, man, I'm not going to pass that one up. Let's talk about $75 million and what they're getting. And you know, while some of the statistics are skewed against him, I think it's time for him to now compete. And this is really it. I mean, he's playing a top five team at home. And if this game is not in doubt with 3 or 4 minutes remaining, it's a major loss for him. I think there's a chance they win. If they're ever going to pull an upset, this is it. If he were to pull the upset, I think everybody calms down. But if Florida goes in there and just lights him up, I don't know where he goes to find his credibility. And that's a real problem for a coach who is selling a product to his fan base built on something other than the reality. I mean, Tennessee went through this for a couple of years with Butch Jones. He kept talking about the recruiting classes and this and that. And when you went to Neyland Stadium on Saturday afternoon, you go, that product stinks. And ultimately, you have to change the narrative. And this is really his time. Because if you lose this game at home, you know, you're not going to beat anybody of consequence. And your recruiting is going to be affected.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum. He joins us every week, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So last week, what did we learn? Did we learn that Arkansas maybe is a little bit better than we originally thought, or was Mississippi State a little overrated after their win over LSU?
Yeah, at the risk of upsetting all these Razorback fans who are celebrating their first win in seemingly 100 years, although it's only been, what, 2 or 3, I think that the LSU-Mississippi State game was aberrational. And in the end, it was a lot of mistakes by LSU, and I think Mississippi State just didn't know how to win. Mike Leach, in typical Mike Leach fashion, celebrated for 4 or 5 days, and not really, but it seemed like he did. And that team had a lack of focus. And you know, Arkansas has got a fair team. I mean, Felipe Franks has proven as a quarterback. I think they're being coached a lot better than – well, they couldn't be coached any worse than Chad Morris. He was 4-18 in 2 years, and it was, you know, the argument about worst SEC coach ever, if his name is not in consideration, then we're wasting our time talking about it. So I think that was just an up and down situation, and I think Arkansas could maybe scrape out another win or two in the conference this year, but let's not get carried away.
And then Ole Miss, they squeak one out over Kentucky. Now, obviously, they have their work cut out for them this week against Alabama. Lane Kiffin, he's been talking, but he's had nice things to say about Alabama as well. 2 weeks in, what do you think of the Lane Kiffin era at Ole Miss so far?
It's pretty exciting, and the fact that he referred to Saban as elderly made my day, because I've heard Lane say worse privately. But, that's Lane Kiffin, and, that game to me was really more about Kentucky blowing it, and they absolutely blew it, as you guys know. He went up there and stole one from Mark Stoops, and, it was 3 weeks ago, guys, or 2 weeks ago today. I'm getting calls, and you're probably getting a handful. Kentucky fans, we're going to Auburn and win. Why don't we get any respect? Well, I don't hear any of them right now, and you're not going to because of what happened. So, I think this is just a free game for Kiffin. The one thing that you have to keep your eye on, whether you gamble or not, is the weather. That hurricane is creeping up, will be creeping up through Mississippi about game time. And it's not going to probably, endanger the handful of people that are allowed to go, but it could affect the game somewhat. And if you're playing the number two team in the country, you want it to rain all day and all night, because it mitigates their strength and gives you a chance. And I don't think they have a chance to win the game, but in a torrential downpour, it could at least be closer than whatever the gargantuan three or four touchdown line is.
Before we let you go, Paul, I do want to ask you, even though they sit at 0-2, we talk to Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason every week, and I've gotten the sense that, obviously he wants some wins, but he's seen some things that he can work with his football team, maybe a little more stability on the offensive line. They play South Carolina this weekend. Do you think they're inching closer to maybe an opportunity to get that first win?
Well, he needs one pretty badly, and South Carolina is another one of those desperate teams, and I'm starting to get a drumbeat of Will Muschamp calls on our nightly show. So I would say if you look at the Vanderbilt schedule, this has to be one of the best shots. And I don't want to, rain on Derek Mason's parade. How long has he been there? 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is? We're talking about inching forward. I'll leave that to your audience to decipher what exactly that means. But this is an opportunity to make a run at a pretty average team. So I would go for it Saturday.
Yeah, this is an interesting, important game for sure. Paul, thank you very much for your insight. I know you got to run. We'll do this again next week, and we look forward to it.
Guys, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, that is Paul Feinbaum. We join him every week on our show at this time, 10:15 on Thursdays. Our Thursdays are loaded with some outstanding weekly guests. Paul Feinbaum is brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. At 10:45, we're going to get a little further into the matchup, some specifics. Max Hurts is going to join us and talk Vanderbilt, South Carolina. But we're going to go back to the Titans in our next segment. So stay tuned. We'll, again, update you on what's going on. It seems like every 30 minutes there's some new piece of information, or more than one, that trickles in on what's happening. But as we sit here now, there's no definitive news that has broken since early this morning when the Titans had more positive cases. One new one today, and one that was, I guess, in question that they have determined, yes, it was a positive. So there will be two more names added to the COVID list later today. It's unfortunately become kind of a daily routine here. You check in the morning, and then you learn who the names are in the afternoon. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Okay, we'll start with the Tennessee Titans. Not good news coming out of Nashville today. Another player tested positive for COVID-19. That makes three in the last 2 days. There was an inconclusive test from yesterday. That also has been confirmed. So now three players on the COVID-19 list in the last 2 days. That makes in all 21 members of the Titans organization that we know, 12 players, 9 coaches or personnel people. The facility remains closed. They've been on a Zoom this morning, but nothing in person, no player workouts in person, nothing for the Tennessee Titans. And the reason why this is important, besides just that you'd like players to be healthy and not on the COVID-19 list, is they play the Bills on Sunday, or they were scheduled to play the Bills on Sunday. Clearly, that game is now in flux, and the NFL going to continue to review that situation.
Ian Rappaport, who is one of the guys in the rotation that seems to come up with some of the nuggets of the latest maneuverings. That's his take, and that's really the general consensus right now, what to do. Now, Diana Rossini, as we said at the top of the show, has said they're looking at maybe the game Monday or Tuesday and looking to move the Bills game with the Chiefs, which is scheduled for Thursday, a very, very attractive game to TV watchers, and perhaps move that game to Saturday, which I'm sure would not be ideal, but it may be what they have to do if there's any hope of getting the game in. But the only thing that would be attractive to me if I'm the Bills with that, Chase, is you're telling me I get to play the Titans when they have not practiced for 2 weeks? That's okay. Maybe I'm willing to maneuver. The Chiefs are going to be tough to beat no matter what. So maybe you take the great opportunity to win as a huge advantage to play a team that hadn't practiced for a couple weeks.
I want to pass this along real quick since we just talked to Paul Feinbaum. The kickoff time for Alabama Ole Miss that is going to be played Saturday in Oxford has been changed to 6:30 p.m. Central Time due to Hurricane Delta. So a little alteration in the SEC schedule.
Yeah, just another thing on top of all the other things that people are dealing with here. That's got some good storylines. Lane Kiffin going up against Bama as the coach of Ole Miss. Man, that's going to be fun.
I love it. Here's my thing. So you're going to sit here, and I understand the NFL is in a very difficult position. But they're going to sit here and they're going to go, all right, well, we're going to try and play this game on Monday or Tuesday. When today they're going to be adding two more players to the COVID list. So outside of the 2 days where they had negative tests, every day since this began, they've had positive tests. We saw last week that they got to a point where they couldn't open the facility, so they finally just had to postpone the game to what was going to be the Titans' bye week. I think it's silly that we're even having the conversation, that the NFL's having the conversation of playing on Monday or Tuesday. They're not going to play. They keep losing players. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't see how anything has – Darren likes to use the phrase, what's changed? I don't see how anything's changed that's going to allow them to play. If they still can't get in the facility, how are they going to prepare for a game? I mean, if you're Buffalo, yeah, like you were saying,
yeah,
you're.
I think it's much more likely that they have to either make it up in week 18 or not make it up. But if you're the Bills and you tell me, oh, you're playing the Titans on Tuesday,
yeah,
I'd say, great.
I wouldn't.
Why?
You want to play a team that's been hit with this thing with, you know, who knows if you're going to pick it up. I understand what you're saying, that, you know, they haven't had any time to prepare, and it's, you know, like it's easy pickings from their, you know, from their point of view. But I wouldn't want to go up against them, because who knows if, you know, somebody that hasn't tested positive yet, if he's carrying it, all of a sudden another team gets it.
Well, that's a fair question for sure. But we do know that there's very little evidence that you get it during the game from somebody, which is thankfully the only way we're still playing football on any level, right? If it were the case, then I think all levels of football would probably be shut down if that was happening rapidly. But it's still a very fair question to ask. I would do this. I would only say this under the assumption that they feel like they've got it under control by then. But you're right. Who's to say we don't wake up tomorrow and there's another one or two guys that get it, right? We know that. As we learned, you can't know what's coming up around the corner.
I would say the odds
every day, And just because you test negative one day doesn't mean you're in the clear the next day.
I would say the odds of that are pretty good. That, you know, that they we wake up tomorrow and there's somebody else that's added to the list. I wanted to pass this note along too, because it concerns Nissan Stadium. The Nashville SC game that was scheduled for Saturday, October 24th, has been moved to Friday, October 23rd, because the Titans will now play on October 25th. Want to have a buffer in between those two games at Nissan Stadium. In addition, they have added a rescheduled game that was a part of their three-match series against FC Dallas that was part of the MLS's back tournament. That will now be Wednesday, November 4th at Nissan Stadium, so at 7:30. So a couple of Nashville SC notes to pass along.
Very good. Boy, it's just tough. So I think the next thing that we're going to have to know, if because in 24 hours, I think the window of Monday or Tuesday is not realistic. I think you can argue right now.
I don't think it's realistic.
It's not realistic, right? You can make that argument. Are you trying to make up the game in week 18? Because after that, you start looking at bye weeks and stuff. There is just no solution like there was with the Steeler game, where they made the one adjustment and they moved forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either week 18 or it just doesn't get played.
And you have to go on winning percentage.
Do the Bills get paid for the game that isn't played? That's a major question.
They would not. From what I heard, they would not get paid.
And I don't know if I agree with that.
That's if you're the Players Association, and you, don't you think you get calls from every single player on the Bills about that?
I would think so, because that's not on them. So I think they should get paid. The NFL can be like, well, they didn't play the game. Well, it wasn't their fault they didn't play the game. Now, don't pay the Titans. I get that part, but it's not the Bills' fault. So I can't side with the owners on that. I think that would be, and I feel like that's something that they would realize pretty quickly, that maybe we should just go ahead and bite the bullet on this one and give them their game checks. But because that's going to create something that they don't need to mess with right now.
Yeah, that's per Chris Mortensen. Chris Mortensen tweeted right this morning that the Bills players would not be paid a game check under the revised COVID-19 terms.
And that's even if the game isn't played but not forfeited.
Correct.
It's the same whether it's a forfeit
now,
or
mm-hmm. Did the play? Is that something the PA had to agree to? Because if the PA agreed to it, then I guess they don't really have an argument. But you know that's the question, because a lot of these things have to be agreed upon from the NFL and the NFLPA. So if the PA said, "Yeah, we'll go with this," if a game is missed, then I guess all you can do is be upset about it. But there's nothing you can really do. But I don't think it's right.
Here's the other thing that, again, in the perception league-wide about this, does not play well for the Titans. No new tests for the Patriots, right? I was really concerned and very curious to see if the Stephon Gilmore would be the only one that would test positive who was on the plane after being around Cam Newton. There was a report that that Cam Newton had dinner with Stephon Gilmore? Did I see something like that? There's all kinds of people trying to figure out what was going on with that. There still isn't, for sure, clarity on whether the Patriots game is going as scheduled, because they're still not in their facility, right? They've got to have another round of no positive tests.
They're in the same position the Titans were last week.
Correct.
I guess.
So that one is in jeopardy, but they got through one day without any new positives, right?
Yeah. Well, so the Titans got through two.
You're right.
And saw what happened.
That's the thing.
Everybody was like, "Oh, I see the light. We're almost there." Up. Just kidding.
I think in the big picture, it's like the Titans being able to say, "Well, we're not the only ones," might play in their favor a little bit when you come down to punishment. But if everybody else is able to contain it quicker, that doesn't shed a good light on what the Titans have gone through here.
No.
Because you
all
saw people yesterday, Chase, say stuff like they need to hammer them. Somebody put, an unnamed head coach said they should take two first-round picks, right? You had a guy for USA Today said shut the whole season down for them. Just take them out of the mix, which is Not happening.
I don't think that is.
There's no think. That's not happening.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous to think about. I mean, I see the argument, but no, we're not there.
I mean, I do wonder if they're at a point where, you know, yesterday I threw out there, if it breaks out to multiple teams, do you pause the season? Right now it's contained to a couple of players here and there, but it's one team that's truly been affected. I do wonder if the NFL comes out and says, hey, they're not playing Buffalo and they're not playing next week. We're going to reschedule the Houston game because it's a division game. They're going to go to winning percentage, you know, however you want to go about doing it. But if they just say, hey, we got to pause the Titans for two more weeks, we got to get this contained and then pick things back up, release whatever punishments. Now, that wouldn't shock me if it's getting to that point. But and it creates a mess. It does. But I think just shutting them down for the rest of the year, that's not on the table at all.
When we come back, we'll talk to Max Hurst. We will break down Vanderbilt and South Carolina. Is this Vanderbilt and an opportunity to get a W? They're playing at home against a team that has struggled a little bit. And as you heard Paul Finebaum, he called it the drumbeat. There is a drumbeat pressure on Will Muschamp. So a lot of factors that go into this game on Saturday. We'll talk to Max about it. We'll get some detail on the Commodore situation. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I got more than 50 shades of gray. Living in a house of blue. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll chat with Floyd Reese and get his thoughts. It's been some eventful shows with he and Jared in the afternoon as they hash out all of this. And what do you do if you're the general manager? You're watching all of this unfold. There's limited things that you can do with the roster in light of all this. We're just trying to figure out right now the math. And we'll talk to Floyd about it. Like, if they were to have to play Monday or Tuesday, how many guys would they have available? So we'll get to that at 11 o'clock. They're going to have to get very creative on, you know, who plays what spot.
They'll be calling up a lot of guys from the expanded practice squad.
Oh, no, that's a given, right? Maybe everybody.
Yeah.
Almost everybody. So we'll get to that at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, Max Hurst is the host of the Anchor Down podcast, and he knows all the details of what's going on with the Vanderbilt Commodores. They take on South Carolina at 11 o'clock on Saturday. So, Max, here's the backdrop for me. I've watched a lot of Vanderbilt football over the decades. You've got Vanderbilt sitting there and their fans probably saying, hey, this is a chance for a win. They played Texas A&M. They played LSU. South Carolina maybe a notch down from that. What an opportunity. But on the flip side, you know South Carolina is looking at this game saying, we have to beat Vanderbilt. This is, we cannot lose this game or else our season is done. So as much urgency or opportunity as there is for Vanderbilt, maybe there's even more urgency for South Carolina.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting two-game stretch to look at starting this Saturday because you have South Carolina at home, you have Mizzou on the road, and depending what happens with the Mississippi teams, those could be your two best chances for a win all season with just SEC games. And I legitimately think that Vanderbilt should win one of these two. I don't feel totally confident right now saying that they have a better chance against South Carolina than they do against Missouri. I feel like South Carolina is better than Missouri. I don't think the fact that one is a home game and one is a road game means as much as it normally does for obvious reasons. But if everyone who is supposed to play, which includes three key weapons on offense and an important defensive back on defense, all come back this week for Vanderbilt, and we get to see what the offense looks like with a fully healthy, functional receiver group that gets more balls thrown their way, I think Vanderbilt will be able to score for the first time this season more than one touchdown, which isn't setting the bar too high, but I think that's how they're going to win. I mean, that's also the only way they ever beat Mizzou and South Carolina, like 13-10, those types of games. So I think they can win one of these next two.
Max, let's break it down piece by piece here. The offensive line was a big question coming in. I think there's maybe some optimism there, but the numbers are limited. Tell me what you see with that unit.
So it's really interesting because the first game, the same five O-linemen played every single snap. the entire game against Texas A&M. And then week two against LSU, they almost immediately, in the first quarter, put true freshman Bradley Ashmore in the game. They had him almost exclusively at right tackle and then moved a couple other guys around. So we ended up seeing three or four different looks, most of which had Ashmore in them. And I think it's going to be Dan Dawkins, who was originally the left guard, who's going to end up coming out. Chase asked a great question when you guys had Coach Mason on Tuesday about what is your offensive line going to look like? Because Derek Mason said that on the Commodore Hour with Joe Monday night here. He said, we need a firm five on the offensive line. And I assume that even though he's two games into his college career, and in one of them he only played on field goal team, Bradley Ashmore is going to be on that five based on what Derek Mason says. So I think Dan Dawkins will probably be out. Grant Miller, the center, has been great. Tyler Steen is probably the best player on the line at left tackle. I would say Miller has outperformed him so far, but they've both been good. Connor Mignone, who's a grad transfer from Central Connecticut State, which is where Vandy's O-line coach Pete Rossomondo was previously the head coach, he started the first two games at right tackle. He's probably going to move to left guard with Ashmore coming in at right tackle. And then you got Drew Birchmeyer, who was playing defense until 2 months ago, playing right guard. So I think that's the group we're going to see. And, I mean, it's obvious they want Ashmore to play. It really is. So even though the O-line was better the first game than the second game, it seems like that's the combination they want with the true freshman.
Do you think Marlowe has surpassed Wakefield as their best running back at this point?
Yes. He had passed him the moment the first game kicked off. And I think this week with Keon Henry Brooks, who was previously just Keon Brooks, has added a hyphenated last name. But Keon Henry Brooks is back to make his season debut this weekend, Derek Mason says. I think they're making a mistake if Wakefield is not number three. But the big stat to me is Derek Mason's now coached 50 SEC games at Vandy, and he's only had two players with 15 or more rushing attempts in the same game in three of them. And two of them have been the two games of this season, with Javion Marlowe and Jamari Wakefield each getting 15 or more touches. And it's worked. I mean, Wakefield's been fine, but Marlowe's averaging 4.8 yards per carry. He's running really well out of the shotgun, which he did in high school. I had him on the podcast last week, talked with him a lot about his running style, running in the new offense. And if anybody's curious about the new Vandy offense, we've talked about that basically in all these interviews I've done. We had Amir Abdur-Rahman, who's a wide receiver, who caught the touchdown and led the team in yards in the first game. Javion Marlowe, who's been the leading rusher in both games. And then just this morning, Ben Bresnahan, the tight end, who has a big role in the offense and caught his first college touchdown this past week. So I kind of got a chance to talk with them about how Todd Fitch's offense runs through their position. And all of them seem really, really confident that once these receivers come back and everyone gets their look down a little bit more, this offense is going to be really good. But yeah, I think Javion Marlowe is by far the best running back. And I don't know. We've seen Jamari Wakefield for 4 years now. He stole carries from Keyshawn Vaughn, which made no sense to me. And obviously Keyshawn Vaughn is better than the current form of Javion Marlowe. But yeah, I don't see it with Wakefield. I got to give it to your Winter Haven boy, Willie. Great athletes come from down there, right?
Yes, even though I was down the road at Winter Park, but Winter Haven would be in the same general area of the state.
Central so Florida.
I absolutely will go for anybody from Central Florida. But let me throw this at you, Max, a macro question, because I invite people to listen to the Anchor Down podcast for a lot of the details that you've got here. To me, the most important thing for Derek Mason in the big picture here is he's got to sell that by the end of this year, regardless of the team's record in these games, that he's got a nucleus coming back that will make you feel good that the program's moving in the right direction for next year. Do you think he's got a chance to build that nucleus with the freshman quarterback and some of these guys we're talking about?
I guess. Are you talking about selling it to fans or selling it to recruits?
Well, I think both are important, okay. Right?
Well, the sell to recruits is going really well with this season. They had John House, who's from Brentwood High School, cornerback commit. I don't know if he's a three-star or four-star, but he's kind of the same as Donovan Kaufman, where he's an immediate contributor in the defensive backfield next year. He committed after the first game. That was all he needed to see. He needed to see that the team was competitive. He wanted to see what the defense looked like. He picked Vanderbilt over Nebraska. Nebraska hasn't had any games yet. Vanderbilt had a game. He liked what he saw. So he picked them, and it seems like the recruiting for the current high school senior class is going really, really well from both coordinators. It was already going well on the offensive side even before the season started. But I think on the recruiting end, they are showing what they need to show. And every recruit is obviously looking for something different. But competitive, competent, a good scheme. And they've also got a potential tight end commit who saw how the tight ends are being used and is happy about that. So anyway, that's working well. Fan base, I don't know. Willie, you probably have a better finger on that heartbeat than I do. But I mean, we're in year seven. It feels bad to say, like, this year you need to get to the end of the year with the group that you want to go forward with. But they picked the right quarterback. They're not afraid to play the true freshman. Donovan Kaufman is great. He's played almost every snap on defense. He had the big kick return. The best players are playing. None of the best players, for the most part, are going to be graduating after this year. So I guess that's where the positivity is, if they can really get the scheme down. And I hope they can add more, especially to the offense throughout the year.
We're talking to Max Herz, the Anchor Down podcast, which you can check out, thegamenashville.com. How would you, with Todd Fitch's offense, and so far two games, I think there's definitely something to build upon, and I really liked getting to know him a little bit during the offseason. How would you rate it from an efficiency standpoint so far? And I know that's a tough question with only two games.
I think they've been okay. They just need the group they need more from is the receivers. And Cam Johnson is great, but you can't just rely on him, especially because he's a slot guy. I mean, he's not going to have a ton of 100-yard receiving games, especially with how little they're throwing right now. But they need to get a little bit more dynamic because they're putting four guys out wide. Usually one of them is a tight end, but they're putting four guys out wide every play, and they just need to make sure that every single person they have out wide on those plays is a threat. Chris Pierce is a senior wide receiver. He's an amazing blocker. If I were game planning against Vanderbilt, I would not be scared of him much as a pass catcher. I would be scared of Cam Johnson. I would be scared of Amir Abdur-Rahman if he's healthy, which he was week one and did really well. And then Derek Mason said this week he was playing through a nagging injury against LSU, but they still played him. And they were missing James Bostic. They were missing Devin Boddy, who's coming back this week. But then they've got Jaden Harrison, who's a redshirt freshman from Pearl Cone. And they're only using him in gadget formations, and the other team sees it coming. His first three touches, he had negative 13 yards combined. Just because it was obvious what was going to happen. Then he dropped his fourth, finally got a positive touch on the fifth. But I would like to see him have more of an every down role. I want to see them shuffle the receivers beyond the top two more. And that, to me, is how they get more efficient. But even without that, like we talked about, the run game is working. The zone runs are working really well. The blocking's been really good. And I think it's because they're, A, spreading everybody out with the four receiver looks, and B, using the tempo. And the tempo really worked against A&M. And we'll see about South Carolina. I think it could work better against LSU, that's for sure. Than against LSU, I should say.
We've seen this come into play a lot, not only in college, but in the pros this year. But is there a concern in the kicking game right now with you?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I got to the point where I was thinking, how can Vandy get a grad transfer long snapper, Scott Meyer, grad transfer from Bama, this is his second year, who's so good. 2 years ago, they got Parker Tomey, grad transfer punter from Columbia, who was very good. No complaints about either of those guys. Perfect special teamers. How can they not get a grad transfer kicker from an Ivy League school or somewhere like that? And then I remembered that they did, but he opted out. So they've got Pearson Cook kicking right now, who is a former walk-on. I don't know if he currently has a scholarship. That's not public information. But he was originally a walk-on punter, and he was the kickoff specialist last year, and he beat Javin Rice for the place-kicking job, and he missed a 22-yard field goal wide left this week and was almost short on an extra point. I don't know if it got tipped. It may have. I couldn't really tell live or on video, but he was almost short on an extra point. So Derek Mason said it's Pearson Cook's job. I mean, I don't know if Oren Milstein is potentially opting back in. I don't know if he's better anyway. But yeah, it's a big issue, and it continues from Riley Gay, who last year ended up being okay. They didn't use him much. He made his kicks, but when he was originally the starting kicker, he was a former walk-on, and he was just totally inconsistent. So yeah, get to four down territory. Use Mike Wright, who's the backup quarterback, in some run formations on second and third if you have to. But I would not assume that the field goal kicker is going to win you a game this week.
It could be a serious issue, because they're not going to blow people out. You need to make key kicks. Max,
hashtag
great stuff.
Kickers.
Yes. And look through the history. You could do some plenty of research projects on Vanderbilt kicking through the years and how important it is.
Over-unders rely on kickers, it seems.
Ah, okay. Well, I wasn't thinking that way, Chase, but I know you
Chase
did.
Is always thinking that way.
Yes. Max, thanks a lot. Great stuff.
Yeah, great talking to you guys.
All right, Max Hertz, Anchor Down Podcast. Listen to it. If you follow the Commodores and you're not listening to his podcast, you're missing out. He's got great detail there. So does Floyd Reese on the Titans. We're going to join him in just a moment here on Darren Donick and Chase.